And now, your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, where one of the great disputes in this nation is the dispute about fake news. Is there anything you can do about it? Is there anything you can do about media distortions or media bias? And there are people on the left who ask that question about Fox News. There are lots of us on the right who ask that question about CNN, MSNBC, CBS. There's one guy I know, and I would count him as a friend of mine, who's actually doing something about it. He is suing CNN, and it's a fairly serious lawsuit. I'm talking about Professor Alan Dershowitz, a longtime professor of law at Harvard Law School, a distinguished litigator, and also somebody who has written some of the best books about the Middle East. And I want to get to that question as well in just a moment. Alan, first of all, speaking and on the eve of the Jewish New Year, which comes in tomorrow night, let me ask you about this new poll. It's reported in the British press, hasn't been reported in the United States yet. But the poll shows that 2/3 of young American adults, this is people between the age of 18 and 30, don't know that 6 million Jews were killed during the Holocaust, and more than 1 in 10, 12% actually, believe the Jews caused the Holocaust. Now, let me give you just a few more highlights and then get your response. More than half say they've seen Nazi symbols in their neighborhoods or on social media platforms. 49% have seen Holocaust denial or distortion. And a full 23% say they believe the Holocaust was a myth. And another 12%, so a total of 35% say either that the Holocaust was a myth or they're not sure about it. What's your response to that?
I'm not at all surprised. The way education is going today in the United States and around the world, all the students are learning about is Black Lives Matter, Indigenous people, 1611. There is no room for the history of other disasters. There's no room for genocide against the Armenians. There's no room for the Holocaust. Everything is taken up. Look at the University of Chicago. The University of Chicago issued a statement by the English department the other day saying essentially the English department is committed to remedying the historic, deep-rooted flaws in teaching English in America, which taught English as a way of colonizing people and anti-blackness. And so from now on, essentially, every faculty member, every graduate student is going to have to take a loyalty oath in the University of Chicago that they are committed to the struggle for indigenous people. And if any person ever dared to say in public, and I'll say it right now, Jewish lives matter, Israeli lives matter, they are canceled. You can't say that. So if you want to talk about the Holocaust, they're going to say you're changing the subject. We have to talk about Black Lives Matter. We can't talk about the Holocaust. We have to know the name of every single African-American person who's ever been shot by a policeman. And I think that's a good thing. We should know the name of every single person. But the idea of knowing that 6 million Jews have been killed is not today on the agenda. And so it's not at all to me surprising that all around the world, basically, people have forgotten the Holocaust, forgotten the fact that anti-Semitism is rampant in parts of Europe today. Even the Chancellor of Germany has said that there's a return of anti-Semitism. We're seeing it in the United States. We're seeing it on college university campuses. Thankfully,
they just, Alan, you may not know, they just arrested 29 police officers in Germany because they had images of Hitler that they were proudly displaying and other Nazi paraphernalia.
Yeah.
I mean, when cops in Germany, this is unbelievable.
It's amazing. Yeah. Let me praise President Trump, though. He felt it necessary to issue an executive order saying, wait a minute, all right, it's fine. Let's talk about other minorities. Let's make sure there's no discrimination against gays and women and Latinos and blacks. Let's do all of that. But let's not exclude Jews and anti-Semitism from what colleges and universities should be sensitive about. And so we issued an executive order including anti-Semitism among the kinds of racism, homophobia, sexism that a university might lose funding if it doesn't do something to prevent. But the fact that the president felt the need to do it tells us an enormous amount about what's going on in the world today. And today, the groups, Jews, but many others as well, anti-Catholicism is not taken seriously. Anti-Christianity generally is not taken seriously on university campuses. There's only room for a certain number of politically correct issues that can be given front and center. When the University of Chicago, a great university, the English department ranked first in the world among English departments, goes back to what happened when I was at Brooklyn College and professors had to take loyalty oaths against communism. And today, professors essentially have to take loyalty oaths. I'll have an article coming out in Newsweek tomorrow about that, essentially taking loyalty oaths that they are committed to the struggle to preserve indigenous people, dispossessed people, people of color. Those are all good things. But universities don't require loyalty oaths. Individual faculty have a right to take those positions. They have a right to prioritize. They have a right to teach, although they don't have a right to propagandize in the classroom. They have a right only to teach students how to think, not what to think. But it's going much too far. And the result is, one of the results is, students don't know about history. They don't know about anti-Semitism. They don't know about Holocaust. They don't know about the Armenian Genocide. They don't know about many other historical events.
Well, you mentioned today politically correct. You mentioned the history of anti-Catholicism. Here in this country, there were convents that were attacked and nuns burned alive. There were lynchings of Catholic people in the 1840s under the influence of the so-called Know Nothing movement, which was profoundly anti-Catholic.
And the Ku Klux Klan was established in part as an anti-Catholic Know Nothing organization. And Massachusetts had a law going back just before the founding of the United States that said if anybody harbors a Jesuit, they could be punished. And if they harbor a Jesuit twice, they could be punished very, very seriously. The anti-Catholicism that was rampant at the founding, Jefferson and Adams exchanged letters in which they said, no country that has had Jesuits has ever been free. We wish the First Amendment would permit us to stop Catholics from coming into the country. It doesn't, unfortunately, so we have to tolerate it and live with it.
I don't know about your inbox. Your inbox, Alan, I imagine it's quite full. I get at least three or four anti-Jesuit emails every day. Every day. I'm at the Jesuit conspiracy and the Jesuit Pope, and they're all taking away our liberties. Okay, let me ask you quickly about speaking of taking away liberties. You have a lawsuit against CNN because they distorted your defense of President Trump as a legal.
Distorted is an understatement.
What they did is they edited it to make you look stupid. And I think there's no question that they did. How are you going to win this lawsuit?
Well, I think the law's on my side. What they did is they doctored the tape. I spent an hour and 7 minutes in the Senate arguing that the president couldn't be impeached unless he committed criminal-type behavior. But if he committed criminal-type behavior, he could be impeached. I said that over and over again. Then I was asked a question about quid pro quo, and I said, of course, if the quid pro quo is in any way illegal, he could be impeached. But if it were completely legal and part of the motive for it was to help him get elected president, which he thought was in the national interest, that is not impeachable. And so they took out all references to illegal, unlawful, and just had me saying, which I didn't say, I said the opposite of, that a president can do anything to get elected. So you get Joe Lockhart, the former press secretary, I think President Clinton, who gets on CNN.
Alan, can you hang with us for a few more minutes?
Sure.
Okay, good. We will be right back with more from Professor Dershowitz and his battle against CNN's doctoring of his tape to destroy his reputation. That and more with Alan Dershowitz coming up. anybody who watches cable news knows that there are news stories all the time that are slanted, that are distorted, that betray a point of view where the reporting shows actual bias. But Alan Dershowitz is out to show something much worse. He's going to have to prove reckless disregard for the truth, that basically CNN knew what they were doing when they edited his remarks before the Senate of the United States and before the whole country, when they edited his remarks to make him look like an idiot, basically. And also, Professor Dershowitz, to win this lawsuit, don't you have to show that they had malice, that they were aiming to inflict harm on you?
Well, constitutional malice is defined as reckless disregard for the truth. Here it was much worse. Here you have a decision, we believe we can prove, made at the very top of CNN to take the tape, to doctor it, and to have me say exactly the opposite of what I said. I said a president could be impeached if he did anything illegal, and they had me saying a president couldn't be impeached even if he did something illegal. I wanted to continue with Joe Lockhart because what he said was just so beyond the pale. What he said was that I said that a president can commit any crime and that what I said was the kind of thing said by Hitler, Stalin, Mussolini, and other people who engage in genocide. In genocide, he used that term, because I said a president couldn't be impeached if he didn't do anything illegal. But what he did is he told the public that I said exactly the opposite. And of course he had malice. Constitutional rule of malice doesn't require that you have to show that he hated you. I mean, the reason they did it to me is because I had been effective in the Senate in making the case against impeachment. They wanted to undercut my effectiveness. But all I have to prove is a reckless disregard for the truth. I can go much beyond that. It wasn't reckless. It was deliberate and willful. It was a calculated decision. They had the recording in front of them. They made the decision to take out the words unlawful and illegal. It would be as if I said the following: I do not believe a president can do anything. And they just took out the words I do not believe. And they said, Dershowitz said, a president can do anything, leaving out the words, I do not believe. Now, those are my own words, but they took it, edited it, and doctored the tape in a way to make it sound exactly the opposite of what I said. That's exactly what CNN did. They did it deliberately. They did it willfully. They did it for the purpose of hurting my credibility, because I had made a very strong and credible speech to the Senate, which several senators said had influenced their decision.
Okay, where does this lawsuit stand right now? I know you want a jury trial.
Yeah, we want a jury trial. We filed it in Florida and in Dade County.
Are you going to represent yourself?
No. I have a very fine lawyer named Brian Rodier, who's done several of these cases in the past, and he's doing this for me. I have some other advisors consulting and helping me, and I'm obviously going to play a big role in the case, but most importantly, the tape speaks for itself. It's res ipsa loquitur. You look at what I actually said. You look at how they doctored the tape to take out the words illegal and unlawful. And then you look at what Joe Lockhart and Paul Begalia said I said, knowing that the deep sixth part of the tapes said exactly the opposite, but they were going to fool and deceive their viewers, because the viewers didn't know that I had said if it was illegal or unlawful, it could be impeached. The viewers were told I said the opposite. That's defamation. It's not covered by the First Amendment. I was a law clerk when New York Times versus Sullivan was decided. So I have a pretty good knowledge of what was intended by that decision. I've litigated cases to the United States Supreme Court on issues of free speech. You all remember the play, the musical Hair. I took that case to the United States Supreme Court. Along with other lawyers, I took the I Am Curious Yellow case to the United States Supreme Court. I've litigated First Amendment cases for years. I care deeply about the First Amendment. But CNN abuses the First Amendment and hurts the First Amendment when it uses it as a license to doctor.
Quick question about this. Would you accept an apology and some kind of financial settlement? Or do you want to bring this all the way to probably the Supreme Court of the United States, ultimately?
Well, I would rather see it litigated. I would like to see them exposed. I want to make sure that they're deposed and we have discovery. But if they want to make an offer, complete, full apology, money to charity. By the way, the money that I get over and above my expenses will go to charities, including charities that support the First Amendment. And remember, though, that CNN is not new to this game. They just had to pay apparently a lot of money to this young man from Virginia who they defamed by presenting him in a negative way. They admitted it and they paid money. If they want to admit it and they want to make a remedy, let's see. I'm open to anything, but I'm also ready to litigate.
Okay, final question. This has been a big week in terms of the peace process in the Middle East, which everybody had given up on. And all of a sudden, there are majority Muslim countries and Arab countries that are rushing to both recognize Israel and, in the case of Kosovo, apparently, even establishing their embassy in Jerusalem. And
I think it's a great thing.
How could anyone be against it?
Well, CNN wasn't particularly in favor. They said it was a distraction. It was designed just to take attention away from the virus and other kinds of things. Look, it's a great, great accomplishment for the president, for Jared Kushner, for Avi Berkowitz, for the people who really worked very hard. It's a great day for Bibi Netanyahu and for the emirs of the two countries. But I have to tell you who gets the most credit for it. The most credit goes to the nation of Israel for making itself so indispensable. In 72 years, they have established themselves as the most stable regime in the Middle East, the most economically stable, technologically, scientifically, militarily. And the Arab states now realize you're much better off being on Israel's side than Iran's side. And so it's Israel that gets a lot of the credit. But look, as a bipartisan, I voted for Hillary Clinton. But my bipartisan interests always praise the person I voted against when they do the right thing. And Trump did the right thing here. And I condemn the person I voted for when they do the wrong thing. Obama, who I voted for, I condemn for the Iran deal, which sold out the United States, sold out Israel, and sold out Western values, paying fortunes of money in cash to a regime that uses the money to promote terrorism against the United States and its allies. So
that's his Alan Dershowitz. I want to mention that he has a new podcast, and Alan is never shy, never, ever shy. His new podcast is called The Der Show. Get it? Der Show from Dershowitz. It's on Spotify, Apple, and more. You can also check out his most recent books, The Case Against Impeaching Trump, and his very latest, Guilt by Association, The Challenge of Proving Innocence in the Age of Hashtag Me Too. When we come back, President Trump just delivered a speech. It was a prepared speech and maybe an important one about the teaching of American history. We'll play you some highlights from that speech delivered at the National Archives coming right up on The Medved Show. On the Michael Medved Show, Professor Dershowitz, when we had him, was talking about all of the achievements of the State of Israel. A lot of that over the last 10 years has been driven by Israeli high tech, where there are many, many American companies which actually began in Israel with either Israeli nationals who've come over to the United States, become Americans, or with companies that have moved their operations, creating jobs in the United States. It's an amazing story, and you ought to hear about it, because it also provides amazing opportunities, really amazing opportunities. Go to michaelmedved.com. There's a banner there for my brother's company, and I know a great deal about this company. Obviously, it's my brother, whose birthday was yesterday. You should find out more about it and find out about this high-tech revolution that has made Israel into a regional power. And it's a great opportunity for investments. You no obligation. There is no cost of any kind. And it takes at most 3 minutes to register for all the free information about the Israeli high-tech revolution and your chance of investing in it, investing in startups, because some of the R Crowd startups have been bought by Nike, Microsoft, Oracle, and Intel. A click on the banner at michaelmedved.com, mention my name, Michael Medved, and sign up now for Our Crowd. Look for the banner for Our Crowd. Okay, President Trump spoke at the National Archives today, and I think he was, maybe in some of his delivery, he was a little bit put off by the echoey nature of the marble halls of the National Archives. The National Archives, it's a wonderful place to go to because you can actually see one of those original signed documents of the Declaration of Independence and of the Constitution. Today is Constitution Day. One of my chapters in The American Miracle is called The Miracle of the Constitution. That chapter is actually called An Assembly of Demigods. Thomas Jefferson described it that way. He wasn't there. He was in Paris representing our country, but he described the Constitutional Convention as an assembly of demigods. And it's worth remembering, and President Trump argues worth remembering positively. Obviously, we've all benefited so enormously from what those people, yes, they were all white males, what they did so many years ago. And that is a much more important thing for our children to learn, the president says, than some of the nonsense about American guilt and about American degradation and about American evil, which is the very essence of the 1619 Project, saying that America has always been based on racism and lies and it's a terrible country after all. Here's the President of the United States speaking today on the 1619 Project by the New York Times. Listen.
The left has warped, distorted, and defiled the American story with deceptions, falsehoods, and lies. There is no better example than the New York Times totally discredited 1619 Project. This project rewrites American history to teach our children that we were founded on the principle of oppression, not freedom. Nothing could be further from the truth. America's founding set in motion the unstoppable chain of events that abolished slavery, secured civil rights, defeated communism and fascism, and built the most fair, equal, and prosperous nation in human history.
Okay, the president is right, and that statement deserves applause. Look, there's a piece today in Time magazine that I literally threw it across the room. I printed it out, you know, I get the piece on my computer and then print it out so that I can highlight it because I thought I would. But then it's just so annoying. Here's the headline says, Trump's threat to pull funding from schools over how they teach slavery is part of a long history of politicizing American history class. Now, why would I throw this across the room? And I did. And I just reached down to pick it up from the floor. Because it's nonsense. The 1619 Project isn't teaching slavery. It's teaching the essence of America. When you read the 1619 Project, they basically say that the real founding of America was not 1607 when they started the first colony in Jamestown. It wasn't the Pilgrims in 1620. It was in 1619 when one boatload of indentured servants, and they were indentured servants originally, not slaves, was brought over from Africa. And the entire notion that this is about teaching slavery. Of course slavery should be taught. And Trump has never objected to teaching slavery. I don't know any conservative who ever has. I made a point of studying it when I was in college. And the idea that it's politicizing things to object to teaching American guilt Any country is asking for its own death, for its own destruction, if you're going to teach young people that the country shouldn't exist, which is basically what the 1619 Project does. The president speaks further about parents and parents standing up to some of the political correctness run wild. Clip two.
For many years now, the radicals have mistaken Americans' silence for weakness, but they're wrong. There is no more powerful force than a parent's love for their children, and patriotic moms and dads are going to demand that their children are no longer fed hateful lies about this country. American parents are not going to accept indoctrination in our schools, cancel culture in our work, or the repression of traditional faith, culture, and values in the public square. Not anymore.
And President Trump goes on to announce a new commission, which sounds actually promising. Listen.
Today, I'm also pleased to announce that I will soon sign an executive order establishing a national commission to promote patriotic education. It will be called the 1776 Commission.
Gets a good response from the crowd. There is this this assemblage of black patriots, and which is very important because it was created to counter the 1619 Project, and it's called 1776 Unites. We've had guests on Ian Rowe, the brilliant young, yes, black scholar from the American Enterprise Institute who writes about self-help and agency and taking command of your own life. He's part of that project. Wilfred Riley, who we've had on many times from the Kentucky State University, a historically black college. Wilfred is on the 1776 Unites. It is so important. I want to support this in every way that I know how. And in fact, this is why I wrote my two most recent books, The American Miracle and God's Hand on America. And I'm very proud that, and I think it's going to be about 2 weeks, we're going to be able to announce the availability of the Russian language edition of my book, 10 Big Lies About America. Because what President Trump is talking about achieving in our educational system is precisely what I have committed a great deal of my life to doing, which is erasing some of these lies that America is a guilty and ghastly land. No, it's a great and glorious land. We'll be right back. On the Michael Medved Show, talking about the president's effort today to inject a new and important issue. It seems to me it is a legitimate issue into the public discourse, which is doing something about making sure that kids get patriotic education, that they are educated the way Americans used to be. Not pretending that America is perfect, not pretending that slavery was actually good. Certainly when I was learning about slavery, even in elementary school, there was an emphasis on how cruel and how awful and how brutal and how punishing it was. And that, of course, is appropriate. But actually recognizing that it's a good thing that this country came into existence. The idea that any human being on planet Earth, looking back at the history of say just the last 100 years, not even all 250 years, but if you want to go back and start American history from 1620, the Pilgrims, we're going to be coming up to Thanksgiving pretty soon, and sure, the entire period of time, the world is an enormously better place because of the civilization that was set up here. And in terms of the, quote, crimes of America, there is no major country in the world that is less guilty or where the balance sheet looks so incredibly good. One thing that's amazing, and this is part of what I write about in the 10 Big Lies About America, which, by the way, the book came out in 2009, and I still love the book, and I think it's really important, and you should check it out. You can check out information about it at our website at michaelmedved.com, or I think they have signed copies at the History Store at medvedhistorystore.com. But one of the things that people say about America is America's constantly imperialistic country, constantly imperialistic country. America has been unique in terms of conquering territory and lots of it, and then immediately giving it back. In other words, does anyone believe that we're trying to maintain colonial control over Iraq or South Korea? The South Koreans certainly don't believe that. We saved that country. We saved them from annihilation and mass slaughter. And when you look at Americans' record as imperialists, we fought a brutal war in the Philippines right after we took control of the Philippines. But sure enough, we kept our promises, and Philippines today is an independent country. It used to be a territory of the United States. And that's also true because we basically conquered Cuba and then left. But that's all in the past. But the past is important. Actually, they use a William Faulkner quote, his most famous quote, which the past isn't dead, it isn't even past. He said that as part of his Nobel Prize speech. But it's used in the new movie Antebellum, which we're going to review tomorrow. But the idea that we have to know the past and feel grateful for our country, that is fairly basic, and it's fundamental. I'll tell you what else is fundamental, which is that a party affiliation and partisan loyalty is important. But there are some times when support for a Republican is just asking too much. And I recently have been looking in the new Republican nominee for U.S. Senate in Delaware. Now, let me tell you. Delaware is 100% certain to go for Joe Biden. I mean, he will be the first president from Delaware. He is a native son there. He was elected for 37 years representing Delaware in Washington, D.C., right? Biden's going to carry Delaware by a lot. And his friend and successor, Senator Chris Coons, remember, he beat that Laura O'Donnell, who had been a freak winner of a Republican primary, who said, "I am not a witch," with a famous ad. Okay, Chris Coons is going to be reelected. So I'm not worried that Lauren Witzke won the Republican Senate primary, but I'm worried that she did, because it says very bad things about the Republican Party. They report in the Daily Beast, and it's a fair piece, that Lauren Witzke's win marks the second time a fan of the dangerous QAnon conspiracy theory has won a GOP Senate nomination this cycle. Although Witzke said in January that she no longer actively promotes QAnon. But while Witzke has been photographed wearing a QAnon t-shirt and has repeatedly posted QAnon hashtags on social media, even as she now claims not to believe in the theory, her connections to the right's darkest internet fringes go far beyond QAnon. And she's not particularly inclined to hide them either. And this has to do with really, really classic anti-Semitic neo-Nazi material. And get this. I mean, and tell me if I'm wrong to think that this should disqualify someone. Okay, she is a flat earther, and she has actually participated in ads for flat earthers. she has promoted the entire idea. She's also promoted the idea that President Trump should become king of America and serve for the rest of his life. In a podcast, and this is from 2019, she was asked, would you like to see Trump as the king of the United States? And the Senate candidate said, you know, that would be really cool because I really think that he is a man who puts America first, and he's the first president I've seen in my lifetime who really puts America first and the people of America first. I guess I could get behind a Trump having a lifelong term. Someone doesn't belong in the Senate if she believes that, and she believes that the earth is flat. And she's actually given money and loaned support to flat earthers. In December of last year, she was in a podcast hosted by Michael Sisko, who has a, by the way, long anti-Semitic history. He uses as his symbol the double eagle, which was a symbol of Tsarist Russia and a symbol of the Prussian regime and of the Austrian monarchy. In any event, she was on his podcast and she said, I'm a flat earther. And one of the other guests named Nick Leonard said, don't say that, Lauren. And she said, I am such a flat earther. And she then is on Pinterest. See, this is the thing. Social media, you have a full record. She has tagged memes about flat earth on the site. And if somebody believes in a flat earth, I think it could damage their credibility on climate change, you think? Or maybe even COVID-19. Speaking of COVID-19, what is the story of the president disagreeing with the very distinguished physician and a colonel in the Marine Corps, Army Medical Corps, actually, but a colonel, which is Dr. Robert Redfield? He's head of the CDC. Why should they be arguing about a vaccine at this point? And when should we really expect the vaccine? And how often do you actually catch somebody saying something that is provably false? Well, we have that. Rockstar Greg Tomlin found it. This is a statement made by John Kerry when John Kerry was still our Secretary of State. And it's a statement that has been proven by events to be completely, totally, thoroughly untrue. We will also talk about some of the embarrassments involved a Democratic governor who wanted to give out a little bit of a reward to some of his supporters, and it didn't work out very well, partially because what he was giving out with an award as an award was distinctly unhelpful. We will deal with that as well. Also, the latest from Joe Biden on the vaccine. What does the sometimes elusive Democratic nominee have to say? We will get to that and much more coming up on a busy day in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
Receive 50. 50-